While we were talking and watching that mixed crowd whose faces glowed with satisfaction at the fulfillment of a long-cherished dream, my new acquaintance, the young Persian, suddenly turned to me in surprise and, pointing with his finger at a passing couple, exclaimed, "Look, look at that. There go some real French people." I looked and saw that indeed this couple greatly resembled the beings I had seen in provincial towns of that country. After they had disappeared in the crowd, we began to speculate about the reason why this genuine French couple came to be in that part of their capital. After various surmises, we concluded that this couple probably lived in some outlying quarter of the real French Paris, and had gone for some family celebration or other to their relatives in another part of this French Paris on the other side of the city. Evidently, they had drunk rather too much at that family feast, and after the celebration, not wanting to make a detour, they decided to return home by the direct route which happened to pass right by the Grand Café. No doubt this was the only reason why these genuine French people were to be seen in this part of Paris. Talking all the while, we continued to watch the passing crowd, decked out in the latest fashions. Although most of them were showing off the latest creations, it was obvious that these clothes had only just been bought today or yesterday, and on close observation, and by comparing their faces with their clothes, one could be reasonably sure that in the ordinary course of their existence at home, they rarely had the possibility of being so expensively dressed and of feeling so carefree. When among the visiting foreign princes, as some of the natives call them, swarms of professionals of both sexes, also foreigners, but already well acclimatized to that part of Paris, began to appear. My new acquaintance, the young Parisian, suggested that he become my Paris Cicerone, and that we go to what are called the places of ill fame and take a look at French depravity. I agreed, and we left the Grand Café and went first to what is known as a brothel, situated nearby. There I learned that the owner of this noble establishment was a certain Spaniard. In the rooms of this house was a crowd of women, Poles, Viennese, Jews, and Italians, and even two negresses. I had wanted to see how real French women appeared in this setting, but from my inquiries it became clear that there was not a single real French woman in this establishment. Leaving this brothel, we returned to the boulevards and walked along, observing the varied crowd. At every step, we passed numerous beings of the female sex, bearing obvious signs of the aim of their nocturnal quests on these boulevards. All these women belonged to the previously mentioned nationalities as well as to others. There were Swedes, English, Russians, Spaniards, Moldavians, and so on. Scarcely one genuine French woman. Soon some dubious-looking beings of the male sex accosted us and proposed that we do a certain Grand Duke with them. At first I did not understand what Grand Duke meant, but after various inquiries it became clear that this odd expression had acquired a definite meaning there during the time when the now defunct monarchic Russia still flourished. In that period, it seems, the beings belonging to the ruling class of the now dead Russia were very fond of the capital of the world and often went there, and almost every one of them, just to swagger, passed himself off as a titled personage, such as a count, a baron, or a duke, but most frequently as a grand duke. And since all of them unfailingly made the rounds of all the dubious places of foreign Paris, this tour was called by the professional guides the Grand Duke's Tour. Taking one of these guides, we went on to see the nocturnal sights of that contemporary Cour Calais. We visited various of these haunts, the Café of the Homosexuals, the Club of the Lesbians, and many other dens of iniquity, where one can see all sorts of abnormalities such as recur from time to time in all the chief centers of culture of these unfortunates. Going from one of these disreputable places to another, we eventually reached the famous streets of Montmartre, which are not, strictly speaking, on Montmartre, but on the lower slope of the district of that name, which abounds in every kind of disreputable nightclub, intended, however, not for the beings of the community of France, but exclusively for foreigners. Aside from these dubious establishments, there are many restaurants there, also designed for foreigners, that stay open until dawn. This whole district in general comes to life only at night. By day, it is almost dead, as they express it, and not one foreign visitor ever goes there. All these restaurants have what are called open stages, on which are presented various amazing scenes that supposedly take place among beings similar to themselves, existing on other parts of the surface of their planet. They show the belly dance of the African beings, Caucasians with their dagger dances, and mulattoes with their snakes. In a word, whatever is considered that season to be a fashionable novelty. But what they show in the Montmartre theaters are supposedly proceeding among the beings similar to them, breeding on other continents of their planet, has nothing in common with what I, who had existed everywhere and had observed and studied all these specific manifestations of the beings of each locality, had seen with my own eyes in those various places. Recently, in this Montmartre, many special Russian restaurants had been opened, and in these Russian restaurants, as well as in others, the so-called artists or actors are beings of the great community of Russia, chiefly from the former ruling class. Here I may as well tell you that only a short time ago, the fathers and grandfathers of these artists or actors of the contemporary theater restaurants, when they frequented the same Montmartre establishments at the expense, of course, of the sweat of their peasants, ridiculed and insulted the individual dignity of beings of other communities. But today, their children and grandchildren have to humble themselves and serve as objects for the satisfaction of the Hasnamusian caprices of newcomers from other communities whose pockets bulge with money. As regards such a state of affairs, our dear Mullah Nasruddin has another very wise saying. If a father likes to ride, even on a child's sled, his son will have to drag the big village sleigh up the mountain. While we were sitting in one of those restaurants, my new Persian friend was called away by some other Persian acquaintance of his, and I remained alone at the table with the champagne that one is always obliged to order at night in these restaurants of Montmartre. At this point in his tale, Beelzebub sighed deeply and then continued. Just now, while I was telling you about that evening spent in a restaurant in Montmartre among the contemporary three-brained beings breeding on the planet Earth, the being Sarpetimnian sensation I experienced at that time has involuntarily been revived in me. And at this moment, the memory of everything I experienced is so intensely and repeatedly associated in all three spiritualized parts of my common presence that it compels me to digress from the theme I began in order to share with you the sad and distressing reflections induced in me by my solitude in those dreadful surroundings in Montmartre after my young Persian cicerone had left me. The fact is that for the second time in the whole of my existence, The process took place in my being, of this same being, Sarpetimnian sensation, which once before had engendered in my common presence a feeling of revolt on account of the lack of foresight of various kinds on the part of our most high, most saintly cosmic individuals, whereby all these objective misfortunes arose and will, perhaps, go on arising on the planet Earth and even in all our great universe. And this time my being mentation began to associate in the following sequence. How was it possible not to have foreseen in their calculations of the harmonious development of cosmic concentrations that the comet Condor would collide with this ill-fated planet Earth? If those who should have done so had foreseen this, none of the misfortunes issuing one from another would have happened, and there would have been no need to implant in the presence of the first three-brained beings of this ill-fated planet that organ Kundebuffer, so maleficent for them, which was the cause of all the subsequent distressing and terrifying results. It is true that later, when this maleficent organ was no longer necessary, it was destroyed. Yet again they did not foresee that by the destruction of the organ itself, the possibility was not destroyed that in the future, owing to the peculiar manner of existence of those beings, the consequences of its properties would be crystallized in the presence of their descendants. In other words, this time also they did not foresee that even though it was possible to destroy that organ, the fundamental cosmic law of Heptaparaparshanok, with its Mendelians, nevertheless remains the same as regards the evolutionary process for the three-brained beings of the planet Earth as it is for everything existing in the whole universe. It was thanks particularly to the second almost criminal lack of foresight that this most terrible situation has come about for the three-brained beings there. That is to say, although on the one hand all the possibilities for coding the higher being bodies exist in their common presence, as in the presence of all three-brained beings of our great universe, on the other hand, due to the crystallization in them of the various consequences of the properties of the organ Kundebuffer, it is almost impossible for them to bring the perfecting of the higher sacred parts coded in them up to the required degree. And since, in accordance with the fundamental cosmic laws, such formations as the higher being parts coded in the common presence of three-brained beings are not subject to decomposition on planets, and on the contrary, their planetary bodies cannot exist endlessly, since the process of the sacred Roscoano must inevitably occur in them at the proper time, the unfortunate higher being bodies arising in these terrestrial three-brain beings must inevitably languish forever in all kinds of exterior planetary forms.